Good evening. My prayer is that my voice will hold out for this lesson. But the good news is, if it doesn't, Preston's already preached it. He just preached it during the Lord's Supper. So if for some reason my voice don't hold out, you've already heard the good lesson. So let's get this set up. We are continuing a look at the journey that Jesus took, and we're looking at his arrest tonight. And it is exactly the passage taken from Matthew, the 26th chapter, that Preston used in the Lord's Supper. It's a wonderful passage. Starting in verse 47, the bulk of our lesson tonight will be this passage. We will look at a couple of other verses, but it's mostly taken from here. It says, "And while he was still speaking, Jesus was in the Garden of Gethsemane, and he had just spent about the last hour praying. Just a little over an hour ago, he and his disciples had had what we refer to as the Last Supper, where he instituted the Lord's Supper. And after that, they go out to the garden. He took his apostles and they went to the garden. And he needed to pray. And he took the people that were closest to him. He took the 11. Judas had left to do his thing. And then set them down there. And then he took Peter, James, and John a little farther. And he says, stay here, watch over me while I pray. This was one of the most, the only word that comes to my mind, one of the most desperate times of Jesus' existence. He's praying to God. He knows what's coming in the near future. It's everything that his existence had been aimed at. He knows it must come. Doesn't mean that it's any easier to accept and go through. And I was, as I was preparing for this, I was thinking, Stacy and I were talking about a passage the other day about how many times like this, how many wildernesses do we have to cross? How many Red Seas are in our life? How many giants do we have to go face? How many times like this? And Jesus' prayer was basically, if there's a way, grant it to me. But not my will, your will. And after he's, I don't know if it's criticizing them or just another opportunity to teach. He was correcting them that, you know, you couldn't even stay awake for an hour. This is one of the most desperate times that I've ever gone through. And you couldn't even stay awake. I understand, you're tired. But you couldn't even stay awake. And then it says, and while he was still speaking, behold, Judas, one of the 12, with a great multitude, with swords and clubs, came from the chief priest and elders of the people. These religious leaders had been conspiring to kill Jesus. We've been looking at that the last few times that I've had the opportunity to speak on a Sunday night, that they had been plotting to kill him and to take him and arrest him, and Judas sold him out. Last time we talked about his betrayal. And Jesus responds He says now, or now his betrayer had given them a sign saying, whomever I kiss, he is the one. Seize him. Immediately he went up to Jesus and said, greetings, Rabbi, and kissed him. The gall, to come in the disguise of a friend and selling him down the river. That's one of the things that is so hard about this. You'd expect it from people of the world. But of some of your closest, Judas was no different than the other 11. Had been with him through his ministry for 3 years. What ifs go through my mind sometimes. What if Judas hadn't killed himself, even though he did this? What if Judas didn't kill himself, hanging himself? He had everything to offer that the other 11 did. He had been with Jesus. He had seen the healings. He had heard the teachings. He had learned or been exposed to the lessons. Is betraying him any worse than denying even knowing him that Peter would do? Is any one of them worse than the other? Judas, unfortunately, had a lot to offer. He could have repented from this and gone on and served Jesus in spite of this. I think of the things, how many times have we betrayed, you know, I'll put, not we, how many times have I done things similar to this? But he goes up, greetings, Rabbi. Like Jesus didn't know. And he kissed him. And Jesus said to him, friend, Judas came a hypocrite, wearing a mask. Not a literal mask, but wearing a mask. Hello, Rabbi. Let me greet you and give you a kiss. Jesus was true in this. He responds, friend, why have you come? Then they came and laid hands on Jesus and took him. Why did you come with this crowd of people? Don't want to get off into the my opinion or anything. It probably wasn't because of Jesus. Judas probably knew because of the other 11. There may be a ruckus. I know. I was at the table just a couple hours ago when people are saying, I'll die with you. There may be a ruckus tonight. I think Judas probably brought the crowd armed because of what might happen. Not because of Jesus. He had never seen any violent nature of Jesus. Wasn't like, you know, granted, he saw Jesus turn the tables over, righteous indignation in the temple, but he never saw Jesus beat people up and you know, throw his weight around and conk people on the head with a stick, nothing like that. It was probably because of the other 11, which, if that's the case, he had pretty good instincts of what's getting ready to happen. His fears were coming true. And suddenly, one of those who were with Jesus stretched out his hand and drew his sword, struck the servant of the high priest, and cut off his ear. In John 18, in John's account, we get a little bit different perspective. It mentions how Peter was the one. In Matthew's account, it just said, and one of those who were with Jesus. In John, it says, and Peter, having a sword, drew it. And we even, in John 18:10, it even mentions who the servant's name was. We even know his name was Malchus. We've talked about this before recently. I don't remember in what lesson. Peter was a fisherman, probably fairly untrained with sword fighting. Cutting off somebody's ear, it's probably, okay, Malchus, stand real still, because I'm going to try to cut your ear off. That's not the way I picture it happening. In the logical, and I've run this through my mind, all the possible, I only see two possibilities. Either Peter drew his sword out and was coming to split his skull, coming down, going for business, and he flinches and he catches his ear. Couple inches the other way, he's splitting the man's skull. Or he's going to lop his head off and he's flinching and gets his ear. Those are the only possible things I can think of. But it sure wasn't, okay, be real still. I'm going to surgically just take a tip off just for effect. It might hurt. It's nothing personal. None of that. But he cut off Malchus's ear, the servant of the high priest. In Luke's account, in Luke 22, verse 51, as Jesus responds to this event and says, but Jesus answered, permit even this. Let them. Don't fight. And he touched his ear and healed him. This man is coming to take him away to crucify him. And he was so in tune with God's will. Let this happen. Peter, put your sword away. Let this, and he touched his ear. Now, the thing that goes through my mind, the crowd, the mob, if I would have seen that, I'm assembled, I'm told, you know, grab some clubs, grab some weapons, we're going to go arrest a guy. Oh, okay. So I'm going, and if I see that happening, I'm changing sides real fast. this is a big wow event. Going back to Matthew, verse 52, says, but Jesus said to him, kind of rebuking Peter, put your sword in its place. For all who take the sword will perish by the sword. He gives him a command, put your sword in its place. There is a time and a place for everything. This is not the time or the place for that. And he explains. He says, for all who take the sword will perish by the sword. My kingdom is not about this. My kingdom is not about armed soldiers and force. It's based on love. Peter, you're not a trained swordsman. Side note. Peter's going to be trained with the Word of God in his life, which is sharper than any two-edged sword. And we see the development and growth of Peter. He will be a skilled swordsman later in his life. That kind of sword, he just whacked an ear off. He's going to do unbelievable work with the sword of the Spirit that he will be trained with and develop over the years. This kingdom that Jesus is establishing, it's not based on military might, things like that. And you look at, it's going to spread by love and the power of God. We talked last week about, Paul said, I'm not ashamed of the gospel, which is the power of salvation. That's what Jesus' kingdom is going to be based on and grow on and all of that. But yet, you look at some religions of the world. They try to advance their religious beliefs by the sword, by force. Jesus says this is not the way in any of that. He goes on to say in verse 53, Or do you think that I cannot now pray to my Father and he will provide me with more than 12 legions of angels? If we were going to fight, I'll provide the fighters. I will ask God and he will send them like that. How then could the scriptures be fulfilled that it must happen thus? Jesus was so in tune with God's will, with the scriptures, that it had been prophesied for years and years that this would happen like this. And Jesus had just prayed three times, if there's any way to avoid this, but yet not my will, God, yours be done. Jesus was in tune with God. In that hour, Jesus said to the multitudes, have you come out as against a robber with swords and clubs to take me? I sat daily with you, teaching in the temple, and you did not seize me. But all this was done that the scriptures of the prophets might be fulfilled. Then all the disciples forsook him and fled. In the crowd were some of the religious leaders. I wonder if the light bulb went off. They knew the scriptures. They knew the prophecies. They were experts in that. And when Jesus says this, that didn't even happen. They were bent on sin. They were filled with rage against Jesus, and nothing was going to turn their mind against it. But I wonder if it went through their mind, what he's saying is true. The prophets foretold of this. It is written in this book, chapter, and verse. And then that last phrase, then all the disciples forsook him and fled. I sometimes get critical of that. How could they turn their back on Jesus? And then I think, how can I? How can I, time and time again, knowing the things he wants me to do, and sometimes not doing them, or knowing what I shouldn't do, and I go right ahead and do, am I any different, I think, sometimes, than some of those religious leaders? I know what the scriptures say, And sometimes I just bowl right on through and do it anyway because it's what I want. Or the things that I'm told and know I need to do, I shy away from, I flee from it. Wonderful, Pastor Preston, thank you so much for the lesson today. I just kind of, I played cleanup, as they call it in baseball. Is that right, Raider? You're the baseball guy. Is that called clean? I just kind of come along and after everybody else has done their stuff. But wonderful passage here. The next time, I don't remember the date, I'd have to look. We're going to look at, and I don't even like to call it a trial. It was a kangaroo court. Dick and I were talking about, and Preston were talking about that today before the lesson. You know, there was nothing legal about the, quote, trial of Jesus. But we're going to look at his trial. Anyway, if anybody needs to respond to the invitation's always open. God is there with open arms to accept people that have strayed back, to accept your repentance, to hear your prayers, to add you to the kingdom if you haven't been baptized. Whatever your need, if we can assist you, please come forward while Kurt leads us in the invitation. Let's stand and sing.